Hello, welcome to the Above Average Irrelevance podcast. This is episode 23, Thursday, September 15th. I'm Matt Weaver, and I'm here with Scott Nelson. Good morning, Scott.
Good morning.
Got coffee. Your neighbors are mowing the yard. Sounds like a perfect time to record a podcast. It's crisp air in the fall Minnesota air.
I know. It's my favorite time of year. I love the fall.
Yeah.
I hope we get another year. You remember last year we had like 3 months of fall.
Mm-hmm.
It was like 60 degrees till December 1st almost. Let's do it again.
Well, anything that keeps me from having to get the snowblower out, I'm all for. So let's start with...
Sorry, I'm having trouble understanding right now. Please try a little later.
Apparently,
Scott's dingus.
It's all about Alexa. And she thinks you were talking to her when clearly you weren't.
She clearly just wants you to buy one of those new
Version
2s that came out.
It does that periodically. I think when it loses the Wi-Fi connection for long enough, it gets concerned.
Oh, and the Wi-Fi connection, as it turns out, is a thing in your house.
It's a thing, yeah.
Well, let's start where we ended last week, and let's talk about your juice fast.
My juice fast. Yeah. Yes. I ended up doing 5 days. I had originally talked about going for a week.
Yep.
So I started, I went like Sunday night till Friday night, and then I had some stuff going on that weekend and I just didn't want to, I wanted to, I had a party and a thing.
Yep.
And like we had kind of discussed.
Yeah.
It was good. I really enjoyed it. I feel like it was successful. I lost some weight. I got kind of refocused.
Now, your first couple days, though,
I didn't feel great. I felt very kind of tired, a little bit weak. By the end of the week, pretty much every time I stood up, I would get lightheaded, which is not a normal thing for me.
No.
I guess it's not a normal thing for most people.
No.
I don't know. But over the course of the week, I found that I needed to be drinking more and more juice. I think that's the key.
Were you also drinking water?
Yeah.
Were you drinking the same amount of water as you would when you were on a solid food diet?
Probably, yeah. I was drinking. Maybe I was drinking too much water.
I doubt it.
For the juice diet. I don't know.
That's weird that you were getting lightheaded when you would stand up.
Yeah.
I mean, that'd be indicative of like low blood pressure, right?
I did feel very like subdued and calm, and I bet my blood pressure was very low. I didn't work out a lot the week I did that. I just kind of like had a chill week.
So why do you think you were more subdued?
I don't know. I think just like a lack of energy.
Yeah.
I think with the juice, it's more kind of quick energy, not that long, slow burn protein energy. But it was good. I've made juice a couple times since. Just, I'm going to have juice for breakfast this morning. I'm definitely going to keep using the juicer. I'll probably do the fast again in a few weeks. Just kind of have some scheduling things that I don't want to start doing it until I can commit to it for a while again.
It's a lot of work.
It was a lot of work. It was. It's a huge pain. By the end of the week, I would spend like an hour in the morning making a couple quarts, essentially, of juice for the day. Because I think when we talked, it was like my first day, and I had, at four different times during the day, had made juice, and, it was kind of like consuming my day. And it can. It's like every few hours, if you're juicing, by the time you clean stuff, you run the juicer, clean up afterwards, I mean, it takes a lot of time. So if you're going to do it long term, I think you definitely have to batch the work.
Sure.
I did find out the perfect solution to the kale problem, mango.
Yeah.
I got some fresh mangoes, and mango kale juice was amazing. Mangoes are really high in sugar, which is part of the reason I guess that works. So a strict diet of mango juice is probably bad, but...
Juiced kale is terribly bitter. Yeah. So you need something like mango to overcome it. Okay. I guess that leads into these two articles about fasting and cancer.
Oh, yeah. I had come across those, and since I had just done the juice fast, we've talked a little bit before about intermittent fasting and health benefits of it. And I had come across a couple articles that, you know, were studies where fasting helps attack cancer cells, and fasting helps repair your immune system. Like this one of the studies was when someone was taking chemotherapy. It was actually really amazing. And the theory is that when you're fasting, it forces your body to use like stored energy, essentially stored glucose, stored ketones. But it also sets off this like house cleaning cycle where your body purges itself of damaged cells, of unnecessary cells. You know, it's trying to find energy saving mechanisms. And one of those is getting rid of all this like wasteful stuff. So like your white blood cell count goes way down because it just starts purging. And then when you go off the fast, everything starts regenerating. Like stem cells start get fired back up and start creating white blood cells and start creating immune cells again. So it's like a kind of like a shock to the system, a jump start to your immune system.
How long did you have to fast for this to occur?
This article, it said 2 to 4 days, like 72 hours was kind of their ideal.
And this is no food of any kind, so they're not juicing.
No, this is a, I mean, it called it like a, just a water fast, essentially.
Yeah. It's, I mean, you know, I'm a well-fed American, so it's hard for me to imagine not eating for 3 days. I mean, sometimes when you're sick, you maybe eat nothing or almost nothing for a day or a day and a half, but usually you just feel terrible, so...
Yeah, one of the articles mentioned that, how, you know, that's kind of your body's natural response to being sick sometimes is not wanting to eat, but it, there's actually a biological process happening there, you know, and that your body is focusing its energy on cleaning itself up.
Right.
Which it can do easier when you're not putting in a bunch more food, you know, for it to digest and deal with. And
which probably
it makes sense. It
has its own toxins and other things that have to be processed out, right?
So that's something I might try yet. You know, I've never really done, from an intermittent fasting standpoint, I've done the, you know, you get up and work out and then I won't eat until, you know, like late afternoon or not eat until my evening meal. But I've never really crossed like multiple days of fasting before. So I might give that a try sometime here in the near future and just see how I feel.
Would you continue to work out while you're fasting?
I can't exercise. So during, while I was doing the juice fast even, I did a little jogging and it doesn't feel good for me to exercise. I did one strength training class and I mean, I had to use way less weight than I usually do. It was like a kettlebell class. So I know what my traditional weights are for the different movements and I was just weak.
And it is just an energy statement, right?
I think so. I mean, I think for me, it's a protein thing. We discussed that kind of at length. Like,
yeah.
It's just impossible to get 150 grams of protein out of juice. So,
Yeah. Well.
So yeah, I think it was a success. I intend to do it again. I thought maybe after the experience, I'd be like, "This is lame. I wish I wouldn't have wasted $300 on a juicer." Put it in the closet, whatever. I don't think so. Like, I think it's going to be a thing in my life now. So,
yeah. Well, in these, you know, fasting articles, I mean, it really highlights how little I think we really understand about how the human body and nutrition works, right?
And all the various effects that, you know, what you're putting down your.
But it seems so easy to, you know, roll up to fast food place and stuff your gullet with whatever's on sale,
yeah.
But turns out that's a really hard problem, you know, from a biology and a chemistry perspective. So, all right, shall we talk about something wildly different?
Yes.
So the elephant in the room, of course, is, you know, that Apple keynote.
Yes, indeed. All the speculation has finally been squashed and validated.
No report, right?
It's
gone.
It happened. You know, the writing was on the wall. We knew it was going to happen, but in the back of my mind, I just kind of thought it wouldn't. Like, there were too many crazy issues that I thought at the end of the day they wouldn't actually do it, but they did.
Well, everybody's talked about the headphone port. We just talked about it. And I've seen very little commentary about Nintendo standing up on stage and saying, we're making a game with, you know, our premier IP, right, with Mario for iOS, for a mobile device. I mean,
yeah,
that I think was actually the most significant and most interesting announcement of the entire keynote, right? And it, you know, it was what's the guy's name, like Matsushita Miyamoto or whatever, the, you know, the father of Mario. Yeah. I mean, he's up on stage saying we're gonna make Mario runs, you know, for iOS.
Yeah, his presentation was a little unfortunate. Did you watch the whole thing?
Yeah.
He's not real great on stage, I didn't think. But the announcement was exciting.
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't really speak English.
No. I had read later that he always wants to do part of his presentation in English. Like, he feels that's important to an American audience. But that was the part that was very awkward.
For gamers, right? I mean, that's like, you know, that's like seeing Steve Jobs walk out on stage and say something. I mean, that guy is
big deal.
A big deal. And you know, Nintendo has always traditionally just been, we'll sell our hardware, and you want to play our games, you buy our doohickey. And now they are leaving that model. I don't want to say they're leaving that model behind. Now they're adding an additional model. Mm. That's a big deal.
It is. I mean, maybe part of the lack of, you know, commentary on it is most people would tell you that they're a little late to the party, that they should have done this a couple years ago when it started to become apparent people didn't want to buy their doohickeys anymore.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose if you're going to armchair quarterback it, maybe that seems like the obvious thing. But to me, it's not clear that that's obviously the correct thing to do. I think there's a lot of risk in what they're doing here. But I think among the platforms, I mean, I'm obviously an iOS fan. Among the mobile platforms, iOS is their best choice to do it, simply because it has a large install base of people generally willing to spend money. I mean, you know, the statistics say that in general, iOS users spend more money buying apps and things than the average Android user. And the homogeneity of the hardware platform is probably easier to deal with than the more fragmented Android platform. I like that they said it's going to be a, you pay one fee and you play the game. There's no like steady stream drip, drip, drip of 99 cent in-app purchases a la Candy Crush style, right?
I think that does just apply to the flagship Mario Runs game, though. Because then there was immediate analysis afterwards that said, well, you know, that secondary set of games they were talking about where the multiplayer, you build your universe kind of stuff, has tons of in-app purchases.
Maybe.
So
I don't know. I would be glad to pay $20 or more for a Nintendo game and be done.
Yeah.
Right. I really, IAP stuff really drives me crazy. I mean, I know that I'm an old fuddy-duddy in this regard, but it just drives me crazy. I do not like it.
By making that announcement, it shows that at least it's on their radar, that this is an important thing, that, you know, this is a business decision, and it's something people will respect and respond to.
Yeah.
Otherwise, he wouldn't have said it.
So to me, the most important thing of the Apple keynote had nothing to do with Apple, right? It was Nintendo standing up on stage and saying, here we go.
Because they did lead with that.
They did, right? And, you know, I'm not a Pokemon Go player. but that's fine that Niantic is going to have an app on the watch. Don't care. You know, that seemed like a waste. You know, yeah, there's iPhone 7. You know, it's a beautiful, lovely thing, right? But it's everyone that needs one, that's going to be easy, right? You know, Apple Watch Series 2, you know, I think it's a tremendous improvement. But, I mean, there's a lot of good things in that whole event. But to me, the most interesting thing was the Nintendo thing. But,
cool.
Let's get past that. So, earlier this week, I mean, you were all in on this announcement, right? You were staring down the barrel of, what, a jet black iPhone 7, 256 gig, plus an Apple Watch Series 2, and take my damn money and give me AirPods, right? I mean, you were ready to buy it all.
Yeah, I was pretty excited about it. So, I have the 6 Plus.
Right.
And when I bought it, I intentionally bought it on the, you know, the even year cycle, the new phone cycle. Mm-hmm. And so I've been planning for 2 years, you know, when the next even year phone comes out, I'm going to get it. And I think that was kind of planted in my head that I was going to be getting a new phone, which kind of triggered the immediate response, I'm getting this phone.
Right.
But then I started thinking about it some more and going through the new features on it. And at the end of the day, you know, so it's got great camera. I think the stuff they've done with the camera in the Plus is pretty amazing.
It's phenomenal.
Really great camera, you know, the extra battery life, the upgraded processor. The only thing that I would use on a daily basis, the only must-have for me really, is the dual speakers. And you notice they said the speakers in the new phone were like twice, the volume is twice that of my phone, and that's one thing I listen to my phone out loud a lot, and the current volume of this phone is a problem, which I've been connecting it to the Echo more and more to use that speaker system, because if I'm in my kitchen and I have the exhaust fan going or something going, I either have to pause the podcast, right, you know, or go put my earbuds in or something. It turns out I think that's the only real must-have feature for me, and that just doesn't seem worth plunking down the $1,000 for a new phone. The other thing is, like, I have a problem right now where I want to switch carriers. I'm on T-Mobile. I'm not really happy with the coverage area I've been experiencing with T-Mobile. I've wanted to switch for a long time, and I feel like now is when I should do it. So it was going to be very problematic. Like, I'm going to have to go to an Apple store. I'm going to have to switch carriers. And so I was kind of stressing about how I was going to make this whole thing happen. And then I was like, wait, if I just hold off, I'll switch carriers with my current phone and just wait for the next one. Like, it just seems like it's the better plan for me. I don't know.
So that's very mature of you, Scott. Yeah.
Right? Maybe my friend Matt is rubbing off on me.
Yeah, you'll become...
But then I'm going to be in the 3 year cycle club, which I was deriding you for. You know, having a phone for 3 years.
You're going to be a prodigious accumulator of wealth yet one day.
So, to be honest, that book we read came into my mind when I was making this decision. Yeah. You know, I'm trying to do better at budgeting and saving and buying a brand new phone that I don't really need.
Fair enough.
I mean, can you convince me why I should buy a new phone, feature-wise?
Well, clearly the most valuable feature of the new phone is the dual camera system,
right,
on the 7 Plus. That's really a tremendous achievement, you know.
Yeah.
In the relatively tight confines of what they have. Blows me away what they can do. I can only assume that engineers at Canon and Nikon and, well, I'm sure Leica doesn't care because they don't care, right? But Sony, I mean, they got to get one of those things and take it apart and just shake their heads and say, that's, wow. I mean, holy crap. You know? I mean, they've got, you know, teams dedicated to that, and they're not achieving that same sort of thing,
right? Right.
I mean, I have a Sony Alpha 6000, right? It's an APS-C sensor-based Sony E-mount camera, right? Mirrorless camera, right? So that's the type of camera that, you know, the bokeh effect that they're trying to simulate with two, well, that sensor is big enough with the right lens, you can actually do that, you know, for real. And it's, you know, it's a mirrorless camera, so part of what I like about it is, you know, it's most of the quality of a real, you know, 35 millimeter DSLR in something that's slightly bigger than a pocketable point and shoot. Mm. Like, you can't really put my camera in your pocket, but compared to you know, some giant, you know, Canon
monstrosity hanging around your neck, right? Yeah,
yeah, it's not the same. Though, if you want to, you know, Sony makes this this 70-200 millimeter G lens that I'd love to have. It's like a $1,500 lens. I'd love to have that lens for my camera. Right, the lens costs twice as much as that camera did, and on my camera, it'd be like a 105-300, but it's a constant f4. I mean, it's a beautiful thing, but the lens is, you know, 16 inches long or something. I mean, crazy like that, right? Mm. Like, it, you know, you put that lens on my camera and you've got this big honking lens with this tiny little, you know, postage stamp thing at the end. It's almost comical, but for certain sorts of things, it'd be a very ideal lens. And what the camera system on the iPhone 7 can do is not even close to that. But, you know, when I think about, when I think about the camera that I had on my iPhone 5, and then think about, you know, the short number of years between here and then, the physics of light capture haven't changed, right? All that's happened is, you know, they've made continuous engineering investment in sensors, right? And that's really their partners. I don't know who they're buying sensors from, though traditionally I think they've bought them from Sony. But in sensors and lenses and the manufacturing capabilities they're within, but they've made investment in software and the, you know, for lack of a better word, the firmware of their processing chip, right? Mm-hmm. The ISP in there that processes those things. And that's, you know, that's phenomenal, right? It's probably true that the tremendous profitability of the iPhone allows them to make a level of investment that most of their peers or competitors probably can't sustain.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so that helps their innovation loop and better than others, right? And it keeps raising the bar. But it's, you know, it's a tremendous thing, right? The very best camera is the one that you have with you.
Yeah.
And if you had an iPhone 7 Plus, you would have that with you, and it's literally the very best camera on a mobile device. It's probably the best camera that can fit in your pocket,
mm-hmm.
period.
So I do think the camera is very exciting. I'm not a big camera user, so I have a hard time justifying. If I said I'm going to go on like a European vacation next March or something, I would probably upgrade to the 7 before I went just to get the camera improvements.
Yeah.
I don't take enough pictures on a daily basis for it to be worth the upgrade for the camera for me, but I do recognize that it's really great. That's one thing I feel like is a little deficient with the camera in my current phone. Is the digital zoom doesn't look great. You know,
digital zoom never looks great.
No. So the fact that the new one even gives you the option of the 2x optical zoom is huge. Right.
Your you're better off not zooming and just cropping it afterwards.
Yeah.
And then living with, you know, I'm not going to print a huge print. But the answer is you're never going to print a huge print.
Right.
Off of what comes off your cell phone. So it is no secret that I'm not a fan of the camera bump.
Right.
I have to admit, my initial reaction when I saw the 7 with the molded or routed or formed, however you want to say it, case back to accommodate the camera bump, I found that less objectionable than just a piece of glass sticking out in space on the back of my 6S.
They have definitely smoothed the edges of it significantly.
You know, the internet, you know, like John Gruber has suggested, Apple has decided to own its camera bump. Right? And that its behavior about the camera bump compared to its marketing for the 6S, where he claims they tried to hide the camera bump, and here
it's... Because with the 6S, it's basically just there's a hole cut in the back of the phone, and the camera lens is sticking through it.
Yeah, right? Just waiting to be sheared off.
Right.
Right? And this one, it's like, nah, the case is formed, it's there.
It's intentional.
And almost all of the marketing shows you the back of the phone.
Yep.
Right? Because almost all of the marketing is on this jet black... Mm-hmm. thing, which it's cool, it's pretty, you can tell they're unbelievably proud of it, and I can only assume, I know almost nothing about the anodization process of aluminum, but from what I have read and pieced together from what other people have talked about it, what they're doing is hard, tremendously hard, like hard enough that I'm sure, you know, people at Samsung are figuring out how they can do that, and the answer is you can't.
You can't.
Right? You know, I don't know. It's, I'm sure black is what they're doing now, but, you know, could you imagine a jet black 15-inch MacBook Pro? I mean...
It'd be hot.
Yeah. I'm all in, man. Right? Or even some other colors, right? I mean, the intensity of the color that they're able to achieve with this process seems quite high. And you could imagine some truly wonderful things down the road. So, it's not that I don't like my, you know, silver aluminum MacBook Pro, but quite frankly, everyone's got one.
Yep.
I'd be ready for something else. So, I don't know. They talk about it. Johnny Ive had a bunch of words that you almost couldn't understand, you know, talking about it. I look at it and I say, that's a tremendous manufacturing achievement, and it's it portends good things in our future for other Apple devices.
Definitely. The AirPods?
AirPods.
I'm super excited for the AirPods. I will buy those day one. Actually, you can't pre-order those. I guess they're just going to make them available, and the day they're available,
yeah,
you better get online and buy them. I'm going to buy those day one. The struggle is real for good Bluetooth headphones. I complain all the time. I hate the wire between my Bluetooth earbuds. You remember, I mean, a year ago I was saying, why can't I just have two separate earbuds that go in each ear?
Yeah, because it's hard, I think, is the answer.
Yeah, and from what I understand, this has been a long, ongoing process at Apple. I mean, this has been a multi-year process. Well, hell, they developed a new chip to put in the earbuds. I have really high expectations for this, because there have been come-to-market recently... various high-end earbuds. You know, some people are trying to do the no-connection earbuds. But at the end of the day, all of those are just other people's wireless technology inside a, you know, re-engineered package. I mean, they're mostly focused on the design of the earbud, on, you know, maybe the battery life. You know, nobody else is making a new chip to put in the earbuds.
No.
That, you know, improves upon the dumpster fire that is the Bluetooth stack.
Yes.
Right? And it seems like Apple is doing this. Like, they recognize that they need to work, and they need to work well.
Well, it's telling to me that they've, you know, they're now marketing their own chip for this. I think traditionally they've used, you know, Broadcom chips, right? They clearly weren't able to get satisfaction from a supplier. And, you know, if Apple, who undoubtedly buys, you know, a bazillion of the most premium chips, right? If they can't get the satisfaction they want, and they're willing to do the engineering to make their own, you know, what hope does anyone else in the industry have?
Right.
If this W1 chip is as valuable and the key to what we all hope is quite a revolutionary experience with Bluetooth headphones, I hope that Apple makes it available for manufacturers through the Made for iPhone, you know, Made for i
mm-hmm.
program. It would be wonderful to be able to get more than just Apple AirPods or Beats whatevers. I'm just not a Beats fan. Sorry. I think they're ugly. for the rest of the industry, right? It'd be great.
Maybe that's their new strategy. I mean, you know, there was this big issue in their, you know, financials where iPhone growth is not happening anymore, right? And Wall Street flipped out about it, and they have to find their new growth market. Maybe it's selling components. What if they can get a piece of every, you know, wireless listening device that's manufactured going forward?
I think Apple's business problem is there are very few markets on planet Earth that are the same opportunity as selling mobile phones, right? A mobile phone, you know, or a wireless pocket computer, however you want to think about it, is effectively, I mean, it's a thing that literally everyone on planet Earth, you know, regardless of culture or where they live, wants, right? Because it's a connection to everyone else on planet Earth. I mean, and it's, you know, parents that I know, right, of young children, right? You know, where children are 5 and 6 years old, are thinking about, man, what age do I give my child a mobile phone? And it's not necessarily, we're talking about, you know, some $30 burner phone, right? It's like, at what age does my child receive an iPhone, right? There is almost nothing else that is that same market opportunity, right? I mean, even, you know, 20 years ago, we might have said, oh, the automobile, everybody wants an automobile. Well, there are lots of places in the world where there's no infrastructure. There aren't a lot of roads to drive automobiles on, and quite frankly, a lot of kids today don't want automobiles, right? Parents I know of teenagers today, a lot of their children don't care. They just want, you know, mom or dad to continue to drive them around the places they need to go, and they'd rather spend the time on their mobile device, right?
While
somebody else drives, right? So, you know, the automobile is not even the same level of opportunity in terms of, you know, who on planet Earth wants one, right? Everyone on planet Earth wants a mobile device. There's always a fuddy-duddy, right? Like, but you know, I don't know that there are many other things that are that way. And, you know, I don't know that this is a problem for Apple. I think this is actually just a problem for Wall Street.
Right.
Who seems to not necessarily understand the reality of the world. But so that's what I think that comes from. I would think the reasoning behind why Apple would make the W1 chip available for the, you know, made for I partners is to allow for a really great ecosystem around Apple devices as a reason to continue to buy Apple devices. Right? That's why I think they would do it.
And a lot of choice around wireless headphones and a wide ecosystem around that helps support their decision to get rid of the headphone jack as well. Like, yeah. The faster they can bring on the wireless revolution, you know, the faster the controversy will die out,
right,
of the missing headphone jack, for sure.
Well, I mean, they're including the Lightning to 3.5mm adapter in the box. And right. If you want to buy one, it's $9.
Yep.
Apple doesn't sell anything for $9. It's clear that they're worried about this.
Yeah. So it's interesting. You know, my very first smartphone was the G1, the first Android phone,
yep,
on T-Mobile. It didn't have a headphone jack. It had mini USB, and it came with headphones that plugged into the mini USB port.
Yep.
So this is like a retro thing.
Kinda.
I mean, it's not unprecedented. There are a couple other phones on the market right now, brand new phones, right, that have USB-C
ports. Yeah, there's a Motorola phone and another one. I don't remember which brand. Here's the thing, though. Apple has stood up in front of the world and said, look, no headphone jack. In 2 years, I don't think any new phone is going to have a headphone jack. Mm.
The most interesting reactions I've read are mainly from audio people, audiophiles, people who have their headphones that they really love, don't want to drag around an adapter, people who plug it into some, you know, auxiliary system that just plugs into the mini plug, you know, but just buy a handful of $9 adapters and just have them everywhere. It's not...
Don't underestimate the upside to having an opportunity to buy new gear as an audiophile. We're in this period where there's a lot of fear and trepidation. 18 months from now, there are going to be some people with some truly tricked out, super duper audiophile wireless headphone systems, right? And they'll be in gear nirvana. I have every reason to believe that to be true.
So one of my biggest questions about it is, so, you know, we have your existing headphones. So like your 3.5mm headphones going through an adapter into the Lightning port.
Yep.
What isn't really covered to me is the other direction. I have these Lightning earbuds and I want to plug them into my MacBook.
Right.
I mean, there's no adapter the other direction, right? So now if that becomes your daily driver headphones and I'm going on a trip and I take my laptop and I take my phone, and I take my wired headphones, I want to use them in both places, right? Like, I'm going to watch a movie on Netflix in the hotel room. I'm going to use my phone on the plane. I need to take two sets of headphones now, because the Lightning ones aren't going to plug into the laptop.
Yeah.
So I'm really curious to see what happens with the next release of MacBooks. I assume it'll have the audio jack, but isn't that really hard for Apple to say no more 3.5mm jack and then put it in their new line of computers? Are they going to have Lightning ports in them? I doubt it.
Yeah, I don't know. I think the new laptops will have the 3.5mm jack. They may also have a Lightning port or something like that. The 3.5mm jack on a MacBook Pro does a lot more than just headphones, right? It's input and output. You know, you can connect microphones and whatever else to it. And if you have the right type of connector, You can even get, you know, optical digital audio out, out of it, right? You know, there are a lot of DJs and audio people who use that port as part of their, you know, music production. You know, it's clear to me Apple's not trying to make a waterproof MacBook Pro.
Right.
And
the space is not at a premium in the laptop in the same way.
So there may also be a Lightning port.
I think that would be the right thing to do for them if they really want to double down, you know, on Lightning.
Yeah.
Then the computer needs to have a Lightning port.
But it's not clear to me that the jack has to disappear out of a Mac. But that does present an interesting problem. I think, you know, if you emailed that to Schiller, he'd say, you know, buy AirPods and stop complaining, right?
That's one thing I'm really looking forward to. I have never, I've never really used Bluetooth headphones with my MacBook. Mm-hmm. I've tried several different times, and it just, like, never really works. And I always have such problems trying to pair Bluetooth headphones with the laptop. I don't know why that is. It's always a problem. Yeah. So I'm really looking forward to ones where I just, you know, crack open the case and they're connected.
Yeah.
I go from my phone to the laptop, they're connected.
That would be handy.
So. We'll see. That leaves the watch.
You're going to get a watch.
I'm going to get a watch. I feel like the Series 2, it finally completes the picture of, they put the GPS in it, which I didn't think they'd ever do.
Yep.
Put GPS in it. It completes the picture now for me of a device, a singular device I can take with me, walking or jogging, have GPS, listen to music without a phone.
Done.
Done.
For a few hours until the battery dies.
Well, we've already established how far I can jog in one in one go, and it's not very far. So it's going to work. And it's really, you know, I've looked around in the past, like I've been wearing this Garmin Vivo Active for a while. I really like it, but there's no storage on it. There's no audio. There's no Bluetooth earbud pairing to it. There has not been a credible, reasonably priced, and whether or not you think $300 is reasonably priced, it is, compared to the other smartwatches on the market. You know, like Polar makes one, Garmin does have one with storage, but I mean, they're $600-$700. Like, they're high-end fitness watches. This is the first, what I would call, like, a mid-range fitness watch that has the ability to have built-in GPS, have built-in storage for music, be able to pair a Bluetooth heart rate monitor to it. It finally ticks all the boxes for what I want. So I'm going to get it.
It's thicker than the previous one.
Like a millimeter, right? I think it was 1 millimeter.
This is not something that Apple does, right? It's relatively rare for Apple to make the next version of anything be thicker than the old thing. This is a very uncommon thing for them. It makes me wonder, is this new thickness now the thickness? Or is this Apple Watch's iPad 3, right? If you recall, the iPad 3 was famously thicker and heavier than the iPad 2 and the iPad 1 that preceded it.
What did they pack in it that made it heavier? I don't remember
that. For the iPad 3?
Yeah.
It had a bigger battery, and it was the first iPad that supported the Retina display.
Okay.
And then the iPad 4, which came out not even a year later, was thinner and had a Lightning port on it. iPad 3 was one of the last 30-pin connector devices that Apple shipped.
I think it is interesting that it's essentially the same form factor, only a little bit thicker. You know, so it's not like they're reusing the... It's not like they're making one case for every Apple Watch now. Right. Nope. They're making two cases for the Series 1 and the Series 2. Mm-hmm. So they could have made some other drastic change to it. You know, it's not like there's any recycling of the existing manufacturing. I suppose a minor tweak of a little more space is a lot different than a total redesign, but it was odd to me that it's the same, essentially the same form factor, only it's not exactly.
So I know that the general consensus, at least from what I've read on the internet, is that Apple Watch Series 2 coupled with watchOS 3 is really, that's really, you know, Apple Watch version 1. Like, this is now Apple.
It's out of beta.
Now Apple understands what the Apple Watch should be, and here it is.
Well, you don't buy a first-generation Apple product, so does that mean I shouldn't buy this because it's technically the first generation?
No, I think if it ticks all the boxes for you, I think you should buy it. What I wonder is, you know, it is to Apple's credit that they are reacting to the feedback they've gotten from all of the people who have bought an Apple Watch, right? And the various versions of the watchOS that people have used, right? When people use this, right, Apple Watch Series 2 and watchOS 3, with the perception that, this is now finally what the watch should be, what will they change next? Like, I think the next Apple Watch, when it ships, in presumably 2 years, I don't see why they would ship one in a single year. What will they make changes from? I think that'll be very telling, whether they think they've got this right or not.
Yep.
Beyond that, I think Apple Watch Edition, I think the white...
The ceramic one? It's gorgeous.
I really want to see one in person because in photos, it's truly, truly gorgeous. I'm not
getting that one.
I'm not a square watch fan. I prefer round watches. Really don't have...
It kind of smooths out the corners, though, when they're shiny white ceramic.
I really don't feel a strong pull to own an Apple Watch. I kind of do for that one.
Hmm.
And I look at it and I say it's $1,300 for the 42 millimeter or whatever. That seems like a screaming deal. Like, I feel like that'll be a watch that
you... You think they're going to sell a lot of those?
I think they're going to sell a lot more of them than they did the gold one.
Yeah.
But I really think that is... that's Johnny Ives' watch.
Yeah.
Right? And I feel like watch nerds, that'll be the watch they gravitate towards, right? Simply because, you know, it's a futuristic watch made out of a futuristic material, right? I don't know.
Cool.
I mean, I'm a little bit of a watch nerd myself, and I'm not really attracted to the Apple Watch, and I found myself wondering how could I justify that kind of money.
Yeah.
Because it's not... I mean, when you start talking about watches, that's not crazy money. Right? I mean, if you are seriously considering purchasing a Rolex, right? You know, $1,300 or whatever it is, $1,400, that's nothing. I mean, you know, you can spend more than that on a Grand Seiko, which is a very fine watch, right? You know, $1,000 is just starting to get to where interesting watches begin to live, right? I mean, even a Seiko 777 is probably $500 or $600, right? I don't know. I mean, I've got on a Seiko Series 5 sports watch today. These are very cheap, right? $150. But these are watches that Seiko doesn't sell in America. So it's, you know, my watch nerd cred is preserved by having a watch that
import.
You can't just roll down to the store and buy, right?
So,
you know, I don't know. I think that one is really a hit.
Cool.
It's going to be a stealth hit because most people, you know, focused on feeds and speeds and prices are just going to zoom right past it, right?
But right.
I think in the watch nerd crowd, I think that one's going to make some inroads.
You think it's going to kind of hit a sweet spot as far as...
I do.
Features and style, function, and price.
And price, yeah. Hmm. It wouldn't surprise me to start seeing that watch show up in watch spotting articles on Hodinkee.
Hmm.
Right? I mean, you're not a watch nerd, so those didn't mean anything to you. But they occasionally have on Hodinkee, which is probably one of the premier watch blogs, they occasionally have articles where they're at some place with a bunch of, you know, celebrities, and they'll have pictures of people and be like, you know, oh, you know, Ellen DeGeneres is wearing a gold Rolex Daytona, right? And, you know, here's a baseball player, you know, wearing a Dars Piguet, or, you know, here's somebody wearing a Patek, or, I mean, it'll just be, here are these people, you know, dressed up and fancy at this event, and all we're taking pictures of is their wrist, right, to see what they're wearing, right? You know, here's somebody with a Carrera, right, or whatever, right? I mean, there's this, because it's interesting, right, to see what people wear.
Cool.
I think this watch will start ending up there. I could be wrong. What do I know? Right? I don't know anything.
We shall see. I think that the gold edition watches didn't really happen. Like, there were, you know, here and there reports of, you know, so-and-so, Kanye West wearing one or something like that. So I read an interesting article that said, I think Pharrell had one at one point, and then in the carpool karaoke video at the keynote, he wasn't even wearing an Apple Watch. You know, he got back in the back seat with him. He wasn't wearing an Apple Watch. Obviously, that wasn't a stipulation in the contract for his appearance that he needs to be wearing an Apple Watch. It probably should have been.
I think if Pharrell had gotten in wearing an Apple Watch, it would have seemed
planned,
even more ridiculous.
Posed, exactly.
The whole thing is clearly posed, right? But I feel like if Apple wants the watch to be legitimate, it just needs to be something that people naturally
wear.
It
needs to be organic, yeah.
Right? Because, you know, that's a lot how watches are marketed. You know, Rolex and all the major brands have a stable of people who wear their watches. But a lot of the people who wear those watches aren't paid to wear them, right? Yeah. I mean, the rumors are that, for instance, Ellen DeGeneres is a huge Rolex nerd, right? Mm-hmm. And she'll often be seen wearing Rolexes, big, traditionally men's tool watch Rolexes, right? And that's okay, right? I mean, I've seen pictures of, like, Charlize Theron wearing big-ass Rolexes, right? And, you know, you can't pay people to do that.
Right.
Right? I mean, that sort of marketing is the type of organic marketing that you get from just making a genuinely desirable object. And for people for whom the cost isn't much of an issue can just say, that's cool. I want that. Right? And to have it. So, I think that's what Apple has to do if they really want it to be the case. And to be honest, whether Pharrell is wearing one or not in the back of carpool karaoke with Tim Cook doesn't move the needle one way or another.
Right.
It really doesn't.
So yeah, I'm going to have to go into a store though. I don't want to pre-order it just because I'd like to see some of them in person. I'm kind of toying. I mean, I'm going to get the low-end one, the aluminum one. I'm kind of deciding between the gold and the space gray one.
So when you go and do that, I want to go with you because I want to strap an edition on my wrist and see it, but I need somebody to talk me off the ledge.
Okay.
Because I don't want it. I really don't, but I gotta see it.
And then I got to decide on the band. I really like the nylon bands and I really like how they look.
The beauty of the Apple Watch is you just get half a dozen bands.
Yeah. Wow.
Wow.
You're blowing up over there.
Yeah. Sorry.
I think they're a little pricey for what you get for the bands. I mean, I don't want to buy a bunch of $50 watch bands, so I'd like to kind of choose the first one wisely. I'm also curious to see, maybe you know this, how easy it is to swap them out. I mean, can I just say, today I want to do this band, done?
Yep.
Or, okay, because I mean, most...
That's what people really like about them, is how easy the bands are to change.
Because I really like the... 100% I would want the nylon band for... Yeah, right. For just wearing as my daily watch. Mm-hmm. For exercising, I don't really want the nylon band. I mean...
You want a rubber strap?
I want something that isn't going to absorb... well, the nylon band would be perfectly fine for running, but then I would want a different nylon band to put on when I got back.
Sure.
Because I don't want to wait for it to dry. I don't want it to be smelly, you know. So yeah. I think that the rubber band or polyelastomer or whatever it is better for sport purposes.
Yeah.
So I'll probably start with that.
What about the Nike one?
I wasn't really interested in a lot. I wasn't really interested in a lot of the features that are supposedly, you know, the flagship features of that watch. Mm-hmm. It had a lot of social running aspects and stuff that I just don't care about. And B, I don't think it's attractive as your daily wear watch. Like, I don't like the neon cutouts in the band.
I feel like the Nike watch would be very popular with people for whom they're gonna throw away all the rest of the stupid smartwatches that they wear. Mm-hmm. And when they go work out, you know, where they run or do whatever they do, they're going to strap that on. And then when they, shower and put back on their clothes for the day, they're going to take it off and put on something else.
Right.
Or nothing at all. So.
I agree. If that's replacing your garment, that's replacing your sport watch that you only wear when you're sporting, then I get it. I'm looking for a watch that I'm going to wear... You know, 18 hours a day,
yeah.
Whether I'm exercising or not.
Well, I mean, if you had the Nike watch, that band still swaps out, right?
Yeah, but I can't remember what... I thought there was some sort of neon feature on the watch body itself.
Yeah, I don't think so. But I don't know, right? Doesn't matter.
Yeah, I know. I'm not going to wait around. I mean, I'm thinking I should be able to walk into Best Buy, Apple Store, something tomorrow and see a nice selection of Series 2. Like, I don't think it's going to be supply constrained like the phone is. But maybe I could be wrong. I don't know.
Maybe, maybe not. I mean, this is second generation, so presumably Apple's a little better at the manufacturing process. And I don't think the pent-up demand is there the same way it was beforehand.
Right.
It could just be that maybe I can't accurately gauge demand simply because the Apple Watch announcement is muddled in with the iPhone 7 announcement, right? Which is clearly, there's a lot of people with a lot of demand, you know. A friend of mine has a busted iPhone 5, right? And he just, it's like, screw it, right? iPhone 7 Plus is on his way, right?
All right.
Like, you know, going big or go home. So good for him. So I think there's a lot of, you know, iPhone excitement, and rightly so. It's not clear to me what the real demand for the watch is, but I think it's high.
I think the watch is doing better than you think, or, well, you maybe don't think it's doing poorly. Most people think it's not
Apple
successful.
Said as much it's not doing poorly, right? I mean, they showed that slide that said, in terms of revenue, we're behind Rolex now, which means that's a lot of money.
So I actually think it's very successful, and my anecdotal evidence is I keep seeing Apple Watches popping up in on unexpected wrists just within my acquaintances and social circle. So,
yeah, but I know a lot of employers now, like IBM here in town, Apple Watch is one of the devices that you can get through the insurance rebate program, right? You can get a Fitbit or you can get an Apple Watch and stuff like that. So I think Apple has taken the hint from Fitbit and figured out how to sell into corporations like that want to hand them out as part of their insurance and or fitness programs for their employees.
Gotcha.
And so, I have seen lots of people with an Apple Watch, you know, whom I know is like, oh, you're you know, work bought that for you. Yeah, it's great. I never would have paid the $300 for it, but, you know, they want to give it to me. That's fantastic. I really like it. So I think that's part of it. But that could just be, you know, we're here in the Midwest. People are fairly conservative, right? Why do I need a $300 thing to tell me the time when my $20 Timex, you know? Or if you have a little bit of style, a Casio G-Shock will have done the job for you, right? But what do I know?
Okay, that's all I got on Apple Keynote.
All right, so let's end on the rabbit hole I fell down a couple weeks ago.
Okay.
And I think I sent you an email at like 1 o'clock in the morning or something, right?
Yeah. You did. And sometimes when I wake up, I have a bad habit of having my phone right there at night. And sometimes when I wake up, I check my notifications. So I probably in fact saw it at 2 a.m. and was like, what is he doing?
So, I don't even remember how I got on this topic, but, I started in on YouTube a couple of weeks ago. And ended up watching a ton of Prince tributes, right? Almost all of these were recorded shortly after his untimely death. And they were, you know, artists who felt compelled, for one reason or another, right, to honor Prince by singing or performing one of his songs, either a song that he himself made famous or a song that he wrote and somebody else made famous. And these are all over YouTube, which I'm sure does not necessarily please him, right? He was, by the end of his life, he was very down on the free sharing on the internet because he felt very strongly, and he wasn't wrong, about retaining ownership and getting paid for his work.
Right.
Right. And there's a lot packed into that statement, and so it's not a commentary on that.
And I think artists in general who are very protective of their music aren't super happy when other people sing their music.
Yeah.
So I have a feeling Prince would not.
So I started watching these, and it's like watching a train wreck. Like, you just can't tear your eyes away from it. And I hate to be mean, but man, they were terrible. They were almost all universally terrible. So, for instance, right, they're, you know, the Dixie Chicks tried to sing Nothing Compares to You, which was written by Prince but made famous by Sinead O'Connor. I saw Paul McCartney do Let's Go Crazy. I saw David Gilmour of Pink Floyd try to play parts of Purple Rain. It wasn't good at all, which is terrible because I'm a big Pink Floyd and David Gilmour fan, right? It just wasn't good. I saw Adam Levine try to sing and play Purple Rain at a Howard Stern concert, like a Howard Stern birthday party shindig. You could kind of see, I don't really know a lot about Adam Levine, but he seems like a super confident, you know, I'm awesome at everything sort of fellow. And I felt like he got halfway through that song and, you know, there was fear in his eyes. Like, he realized,
this is not going
crap,
well.
Right? Yeah. And, you know, I mean, they were, Kelly Clarkson tried to sing it, right? I couldn't even make it through hers all the way to the end. It's fantastic that people felt so motivated, you know, by his passing, that they wanted to honor him. I really do get that. But, man, it really highlighted to me his talent. And then you'd go watch, you know, there was the Hall of Fame introduction for, I think it was George Harrison, right, where everybody stood up on stage and played While My Guitar gently weeps, right? Including Prince, right? It's Tom Petty and all of these people standing there playing that mm-hmm. song. And Prince is standing on the side. He wasn't in the limelight. You hardly even see him in the video. And he's there to do the guitar solo at the end. That's all he was there for, right? And so they played and they sang the song. And it was a really great rendition of the song. I thought, you know, Tom Petty and company did a fantastic job. And then they get to the guitar solo part and everybody kind of looks over at Prince and he just steps out and just beats everybody with a bat. I mean, it is kind of out of control, right? And, you know, like, he plays this awesome guitar solo and he has this, like, mic drop moment where he's done, the song is done, and he takes off his guitar and he throws it. And you never see it come down. Like, clearly it came down somewhere, right? But he just takes his guitar off and throws it. And you have no idea where the hell it went, right? He's like, yep, nailed that. Done. Right? So if you end up falling down the Prince rabbit hole on YouTube, you might, like myself, be kind of stunned and amazed at the people who attempt various Prince songs, of which Purple Rain seems to be the most popular, and how most people do it badly. Which led me to what I emailed you was, let me make this long story short. Here is the best one I found.
Watch this.
Watch this one. If you're going to watch one, this is what you're going to watch. And it was by a gentleman named Corey Taylor, who is the lead singer of Slipknot. And he happened to be at First Avenue, which was
part of the Prince story. Yeah.
Was literally made famous by Prince, and it happens to be where Purple Rain was recorded, because he recorded that live, and that's what ends up making it onto the Purple Rain album. It's just him playing by himself and an acoustic guitar and singing the song. As you pointed out, he had a very favorable crowd, right? But of all of the videos that I watched, of all the renditions I heard, his was the best. Simply because he played within his ability, and he sang within his ability, and he did not try to be Prince. He just said, this song is important to me, right? And I want to honor Prince by me doing it within the best of my ability. I'm not going to try to be Prince.
Right.
I'm just going to be me singing his song. And after a sea of not great stuff, I thought this was pretty good.
Yeah, and I think what that's rooted in is Prince is such an iconic artist. And so much of his music, you know, is tied up in his artistry.
Yeah.
It's not just a song that anybody could sing this song and it would be a great song. I mean, he sings a lot of great songs, but a lot of them are great because he's singing them.
Yep.
You know, I mean, it's this package of the singer-songwriter where, you know, it doesn't translate when somebody else sings it.
Right.
And so then you have people trying to sing songs like Prince sings them.
Yep.
To achieve that replica, and it
just falls flat.
Yeah.
So we'll have that link in the show notes. The as a side note, you know, Radiohead has this song "Creep," which Radiohead the band has an interesting relationship with this song. But I did actually find a YouTube video of Prince singing "Creep" at a concert.
Really?
Yeah. And Prince being Prince, of course, he changes the lyrics and sings it in a very Prince way. But it's, I mean, I like Radiohead's song "Creep," but this was a different take and almost equally as good. I mean, it's hard to sometimes divorce yourself from, you know, from
the genesis of a song.
Yeah, like you've listened to that on the CD or whatever, like 100 times, and then you hear it differently. But it was kind of phenomenal. So,
that has to be a very interesting thing as an artist to have someone else, you know, do a successful but different rendition of your song.
Well, and I guess Prince famously did not want this recording of him singing Creep on YouTube. And then there was a legal argument because Radiohead was like, it's our song. We think it's a good version.
Yeah.
Let it be out there. Right. And so it is out there now. You can find it, but, it was another unique thing, but I didn't feel like it was as relevant because it wasn't people trying
to be,
they weren't impaling themselves on the wall of Prince. Right. So
I've heard a lot of Prince music over the years. I really like Prince. I've never done a deep dive. You know, I've done this with a lot of artists over the years, but I've never done the Prince, listen to every album, you know, do the complete discography. It's like
30 discs.
I know. That's part of the reason it's hard to, I mean, that would
you'd
be.
You'd have to take a year off from work and just start at disc one and maybe you'd be done by the end. Right?
Plus, I mean, you know, the way he was very protective of his music, it's a little harder to get at it. I mean.
Yeah, because it's not necessarily all on Apple Music.
Well, I think it's only on Tidal, actually, as far as streaming goes.
Oh, yeah.
So I'd have to start with discs. I'm not going to subscribe to Tidal. I mean...
That'd be ludicrous.
Hello. So I'd have to start with discs from the beginning and start sourcing. When I do that with an artist, I tend to get what I can from the library, get what I can off Apple Music, and then buy when I have to fill in the gaps. But
yeah, I mean,
it's going to be tough with Prince.
I only have two Prince CDs, right? I've got Purple Rain and 1999, right? Which has Little Red Corvette on it. Well, in 1999, of course.
Mm.
You could easily have to spend, you know, $200 at Amazon getting all those discs shipped to your house, right? And I feel like, you know, if you went to the library, a lot of the discs might be trashed, right? Because they've been recently popular, and so the great unwashed mashes will... touch the wrong side of the disc and otherwise smear peanut butter all over them. I don't know. I've long had a thing about my CDs are mine and don't touch them. But
I frequently have to, when I get a disc from the public library, have to clean it before I'm willing to put it in whatever, you know, whether I'm going to put it in my computer, just because I feel like it's going to actually do damage to my hardware because there's so much filth on it.
Yeah. It's, So, yeah, there you go. The best Prince tribute I've found.
All right. I'm glad you did the legwork for me so I didn't have to suffer through.
Yeah.
Well, at 1 a.m.
I guess I'm secretly hopeful that at some point you'll fall down the rabbit hole and come up with a better tribute than the one I found. That'd be even better. That'd be an interesting, you know, digital shrine.
Right.
To leave for Prince that he may or may not like, but it would be just a page of links. Here's the best of people trying to honor you. And we'll just politely not mention the mess of everybody else. Right. So, all right. We've been going at this for a while and I'm almost out of coffee.
Better wrap it up.
Got anything else?
Nah, nothing that won't wait.
Since apparently you're waiting on Apple Watch and Apple phone.
I think I'm going to, I don't know, I might try and go look at a watch tomorrow because now I'm excited about it. I don't want to wait.
I think you might get 3 months in.
You think I'm going to get the phone, don't you?
I think you're going to get the phone.
I don't know. So I'm 2 years into this phone. And my AppleCare is running out. It's very likely something bad's going to happen
next year. Again because you got
it does charge lint. Again. Yeah,
you got all the lint out of the lightning port. So.
There was a piece of lint the size of like a grain of rice that I pulled out of that charging port, and it wasn't obvious to me. You know, you had told me there's lint in there. Other people had told me that, and I looked, and I had looked with a bright light, and I couldn't see the lint in there, and I had to start fishing around in there. With a piece of
wire to find it.
I don't even know where it was hiding. And then it just kind of popped out.
When you stare at the bottom of your lightning port, the actual plastic that's in there is white. And if it's not white, then it's covered in lint. Like, I cleaned mine yesterday. I mean, I've had the phone about a year. I was like, I should clean them. Right? And when I looked in the bottom with a flashlight, it wasn't white. Huh. So I dug in there with a paper clip, which I'm
sure... Maybe that's it. I didn't even realize that visual inspection that...
Yeah. And I had some lint in mine. Not enough to affect it, but there was lint in it.
So now I'm back into charging. So it's not inconceivable that something bad will happen in the next 6 months. Yeah. When this phone gets trashed, I'm not going to replace it with a 6. I obviously will buy a 7.
I mean, now that 7s are out, right? If that phone, got destroyed next month, you'd just buy a 7.
Definitely. But the current plan is I'm going to make it another year and I'm going to get whatever.
Get a 7S.
Well, or whatever is next. If it's really, the rumor is it's going to be some big 10th anniversary, big deal phone. And I doubt if it's a big deal phone, they're going to call it the 7S, but we'll see.
I think the internet is making more of this 10th anniversary than Apple is.
They kind of have a history of this, though, right? I mean, wasn't there like a 10th anniversary Mac and a 20th anniversary something? I'll have to do some research on that before next time. They have a history of making anniversary products.
There might be a marketing push, but I'm pretty sure the hardware engineers are going to be like, what am I going to do? Like, magically create some grand leap this year? I mean, unless Apple was literally holding back on something they could have shipped this year, I don't see it.
Okay. Then yes, 7S will be my next phone.
Until then...
All right. See ya.